are back. It has been a while, but you are back in the box. We've landed in Juicebox Radio on 101.9 FM. Or maybe you're one of our podcast listeners. However you've decided to spend the hour with us, we're really glad to have you. It's Ms. McGillivray and Ms. Julia Saunders, and we are back. And we've got a lot of great things to talk about, and we've been away because of the weather, the holidays, the whole nine yards.
Some traveling for you, Ms. McGillivray?
Yes, Ms. Saunders.
And we've had crazy snow here in Vancouver.
Crazy snow.
We've been snowed out, and then of course we got a nice 2-week break along with a lot of other leather DJs and
leather
programmers on CITR. We all got a nice break, and then the week back last week Julia was ill and Caroline was away, so really we apologize. We've been off the air for over a month, and boy has it been a nice break.
It's been a wonderful break.
Five and some years on the air. It's nice to get the odd holiday. Anyway, but we are glad to be back now. So if we're a bit rusty tonight, please forgive us, listeners. We do have a very exciting guest for tonight. She's calling from halfway around the world. Jane Bennett, who's co-authoring The Pill, Are You Sure It's For You? And she is dialing in to our listeners tonight, and we're talking about the birth control pill along with a lot of other topics. So join us as we get this Aussie woman to take on being on the pill and why doctors prescribe it for skincare, why it's used for regulating menstrual cycles, how does it lower the sex drive, etc. And according to the book, The Pill, Are You Sure It's Right For You? 2 in 10 women do conceive while taking the pill. So we all think it's so foolproof, but perhaps it isn't. And others have difficulty conceiving when they really want to, when they come off this drug. Not to mention my own experience with in my sex ed practice, just the real push for menstrual suppression and a lot of other sort of more social construction issues that are happening based on this whole let's get rid of the period, the menstrual cycle, it's terrible, etc., and our lack of a lot of other things like rites of passage and important aspects of education and health that we are ignoring and making kind of wrong and bad out there. So we're going to be talking about a lot of things tonight around these topic areas, and I'm very excited and we're honored to have our guest Jane Bennett calling in. Welcome, Jane.
Hello.
Oh, there you are. Awesome.
I'm here.
What time is it in Australia right now?
Well, it's actually 5:08 in the afternoon, and Thursday here.
Oh, what a nice...
it's Wednesday there.
Oh, it's Thursday. Okay, well, what a nice time of day to be listening to a sex show. That's fabulous. 5:00.
Yeah, no, it's great.
On your commute home from work, so... okay, so we are going to be taking calls, and we'll be talking about a lot of topics that are probably interesting to a lot of people out there. So if you do, feel free to call in, and we'll give you the number now and at the half hour, but we often don't repeat it. So please write it down if you want to call in and contribute to the conversation. And that's at 604-822-2487. That's 604-UBC-CITR. Caroline, do you want to go ahead and... Okay, I always feel like I'm the one talk. Give you a chance. So anyway, all right. So Jane, we understand that you facilitate workshops for girls and their mothers celebrating things like menarche, and which is the beginning of your period, for those who don't know what menarche is, and fertility, and for dads on how to handle the changes and how to stay close to their daughters.
That's right.
That's such great work and very exciting, and hopefully we'll get a chance to talk a little bit about that tonight. But I'm wondering, through this work and other work, what maybe prompted you to write this book with Alexandra Pope? She's your co-author, right, on this book?
She is, that's right. And Alexandra's living in the UK now, so she's another halfway around the world. I started in my mid-20s. I learnt methods of natural fertility management, which was for contraception, which was charting my cycle. And very quickly into that process, I really kind of had an epiphany, I guess, that how marvelous it was to really learn about my cycle, and that at that stage, for around 15 years, I had been cycling already, and but to actually chart it in a quite a precise way and really learn what was happening, learn the signs leading up to ovulation, the signs leading up to menstruation, really getting a much more internal sense of what was happening with my cycle. And really, when I look back now, since that time, I've been working in that field one way or another. So I went on to teach natural fertility management methods, which I still do. And
that's a workshop
to
all in itself,
write,
isn't it?
With another author here, Francesca Naish, natural fertility management kits for conception and contraception. Of course, the methods are the same. It's just the doorway in's a bit different. And then out of that work, I began to offer the workshops for mothers and daughters because I had women coming to me who were saying, look, these are, it's just fantastic learning about my cycle in this way. And I want my daughter to have a better experience of beginning to menstruate than I had. But where are the tools? How do we do that? A lot of women want that for their daughters. They don't want to pass on menstruation as a curse or an awful thing. But we still have in our larger culture, you know, really quite negative views around the cycle, or even that it's a nothing, that it doesn't, that it's not useful or important as part of a woman's life.
Was there a certain incident or anything that prompted you to write this?
So Jane had just expressed that she was Jane, I just wanted to stop you for a second because we have so much information in what you just said, and we want to just sort of back it up a little bit and get the listeners on board with some of the language that you're using and some of the descriptions that you're describing, which are important and we want to talk about over the show. So we'll just stop there for a second and just say, so basically when you learned how to chart your natural cycle is the point where you have really kind of transpired over your life and changed your career and things have developed since then, and now you've written this book. So this is great. Thank you. I just want to get people up to speed on a few things, and one of them is, like, what is the pill? You know, how does it work? What does it do for your body? Kind of quickly, if you can just go over it really fast.
Sure. Well, it's a very big question, though, so I'll do my best. Mm-hmm. We use the word the pill in inverted commas, because what we're meaning is of course, the oral contraception pill. But other forms of chemical contraception are using the same or similar synthetic hormones. So they're either made up of synthetic progesterone alone or synthetic progesterone and synthetic estrogen mixed together. So whether you take that orally, whether it's releasing slowly in your arm or through injection, or releasing through an IUD in your uterus or a vaginal ring, these are all different ways of receiving these same chemicals.
So these are the hormonal methods of contraception control.
That's right.
And so that's when we say the pill, that's what we're talking about over the...
Well, that's what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. That's what we talk about in the book, although I do say in the introduction, in order for the ease of discussion, that's what we're meaning, unless in some parts we do specifically talk about different modes of delivery. So we do talk about that as well in the book. But overall, to separate them all out would get so complex and confusing.
Yeah, that's fine.
And largely they have very similar effects anyway.
So what are some of the effects? How does this work? How do the hormonal... what does it do to your body? What are some of the side effects?
Sure. Because I've been working in natural fertility management for many years, I'd been, you know, watching and looking and hearing enormous evidence of research of problems that women have been having with the pill, and also women's stories. So very often women were getting onto the pill very easily, maybe in their even mid to late teens, and sometimes with a little bit of questioning around their histories, and sometimes very little or none at all, and yet these are significant drugs, and we're often used to the terms, you know, low dose or, you know, mini pill, these kind of words that suggest that there's not much in them. And this is really a misnomer, and I would say more advertising than anything else, because on average, or even the lowest dose of these drugs, give us four times the level of hormone than we would naturally have at the peak of our menstrual cycle. So you can imagine it's massively larger than we normally have, and hormones generally are very powerful. Our naturally produced hormones are very powerful. For an example, we with estradiol, our most prolific natural estrogen that we produce, it would take 250,000 fertile women who aren't on the pill. If we distilled their blood, we'd end up with 1 teaspoon of estradiol. It's that powerful. So it's generally measured in parts per trillion. So you can imagine the difference it makes if you're upping that 4 times and keeping the hormone levels at that constantly. It's really making a massive difference to our hormone levels, and this affects not only our fertility but our whole biochemistry is altered by these drugs.
So some of the side effects that people might experience then would be.
Well, depression is very, very common, and we had some research that came out in Melbourne a couple of years ago that found that almost 50% of women taking the pill were experiencing, clinically definable depression.
Okay, that's pretty serious.
And some, obviously, even at the very serious suicidal end, but nearly 50% were experiencing depression. So it's huge. And then on top of that, we've got various different kinds of mood disorders as well that women report.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so these
makes sense if you're having 4 times the amount of hormones. I can really see that. In North America, the top 3 reasons that doctors prescribe the birth control pill are usually because of, birth control, obviously, skin care, and just to regulate the menstrual cycle. Mm-hmm. And do you find that same halfway across the world?
I would say that's very similar, and it kind of makes me laugh, although not with joy. particularly if I can sort of look at some of those separately, and contraception's probably the one I'd look at last. With skin care, it's really a little crazy to be trying to regulate that with synthetic hormones.
Yeah.
Of course, it can work temporarily. Mm-hmm. It can change our hormone levels, and some girls, particularly in their teen years, might find that it helps clear up their acne, although it doesn't always. And when I was speaking to a family planning doctor here recently, she said that these differences in when they're researching different kinds of pill, some of the differences that'll lead to a doctor prescribing a certain pill for skincare, she said they're really very small. Because of the business side of the pharmaceutical industry, these small differences are exaggerated enormously and marketed to doctors. I'm not sure in Canada are pharmaceutical companies able to market directly to the public the prescription drugs?
Not as freely, but we do.
I know
in America they do.
And they do in New Zealand too, but they don't here.
Yeah, they do.
So they have to be marketed to doctors who then will prescribe them for their patients.
Yeah, there's billboard ads and things like that for different prescriptions. Usually all of them involve the pill, actually, in Canada.
Well, that's right. And
that's where the big money is.
Kind of, and really, there's so many other ways to help with skin problems. There's another piece of research that came out of the Melbourne Institute of Technology did a study with teenagers, both boys and girls, and a particular diet that was very low processed food, high protein, really good quality carbohydrate in terms of lots of vegetables and so on. And they found when they switched diet to this sort of diet, there was in 2 or 3 months there was a 50% improvement in skin.
Okay.
So they,
is
as well
high.
As a whole lot of other markers too, like energy and concentration and so on.
I think that this, we don't need to get into too much more about definitely, I think the physical reasons that doctors prescribe the pill, people can probably read more about that in your book and things like that. I'm actually really interested more in picking your brain about the social construction of menstruation and rites of passage, and how do we educate our partners, and how do we deal with negotiating things in relationship and things like that. So with our short time that we have with you.
That's certainly a pet subject of mine anyway, so very happy to go there.
Yeah. So definitely I can see, I mean, obviously with skin and other, like, health issues that people are put on the pill for can be addressed with things like, you know, diet, exercise, you know, naturopathic, you know, you know, healing and things like that. So certainly not a good reason. But, of course, the education isn't out there, and doctors tend to just throw people on the pill all the time for all kinds of reasons without thinking about what it's doing to our bodies in the long term and the planet, actually. But
that's
another show, another day. So we have lots of reasons that we don't want to be on the pill. I can understand that. But what is this whole menstrual suppression wave that's going on with seasonal and of course, the depot shot, which now in Canada is pretty widespread that we don't want to use it, that it's all bad, which is good. So, but we still have this seasonal thing and how, you know, making out periods to be bad for you and all the mess and the fuss and reinforcing these messages and to the young population even more so. So can you speak to that about what's going on there and how can we counter that?
It is a very interesting and very troubling phenomena. The use of the pill and the formulation or marketing of the pill for menstrual suppression, but of course the pill has always had that capacity. It's just sort of a new package in a new marketing, really.
Yeah.
I think it, you know, in many ways it comes from we've had thousands of years, particularly in Western culture and Judeo-Christian culture, of negative views around menstruation and around these processes of women's bodies. And while we might look back 100 years and say, oh, things have changed, you know, we can talk about menstruation more now, we would see it more as, you know, something that is normal to some extent. So in some ways we can say, oh, well, it's things are better, or we might see it more scientifically, for instance. However, the fact that we can use a pill, whether it's seasonal and that's marketed for menstrual suppression, or whether it's just the regular pill where a woman will have a bleed, but it's not a real period, it's not a real menstruation, because it's just a withdrawal bleed. So when she, particularly say with the pill, when a woman, the oral contraception pill, when a woman is taking the placebo days, and which triggers a bleed, it's only a withdrawal bleed from the drug. So, and this was sort of put in place to help women feel that it was a more natural thing. But of course, it's not at all. So she really may as well be taking them all if she taking it continuously. With some of the other forms of chemical contraception, like Depo-Provera or Implanon, is it called there? I'm not sure. The implants, where it's a continual release of the drug, women won't have a regular period, but will have break. Oh, very often they have breakthrough bleeding, so they won't know when that's happening. But none of this is a natural cycle. So we have had a very long history of not appreciating what menstruation is about and what the cycle is for women. And therefore, I think that that's part of the reason why we've sort of taken to these drugs sort of en masse, because we've generally had no sense of value in the cycle for its own sake. And a lot of my work is around helping women and girls, particularly girls either just before they're coming into their cycle, really learn about their cycle in a very positive way, really learn about it in the sense that this is an amazing thing happening in their body, an amazing process that they're embarking on, and that they will be cycling for around 35 to 40 years, and really helping them see that and experience that as a very positive thing, and learning how to look after themselves in their cycling, and know that even in a very healthy cycle where there's no particularly difficult or uncomfortable symptoms, that there is a natural ebbing and flow of energy, of emotion, of feeling, of intuition, mm-hmm. of extroversion, all sorts of things. And this is a natural part of women's flow and rhythm. And by being able to learn about it and have awareness of their cycle and approach it as a very positive, natural, healthy part of being a woman, they're able to use that and have a much, much more positive relationship with their body. Mm-hmm. And then later on, what I find and what parents are naturally very pleased about too is if a girl is introduced to the changes of her body as she becomes fertile in this positive way, when it comes time somewhat later on when she's has a boyfriend or falling in love, she's able to make healthy choices about what's right for her and when.
So it's more
in terms of sexual involvement.
Okay, so it's healthy to have a menstrual cycle now. I know that my co-host is making faces at me because you said like 35 years of this going on. I personally was on the pill for like probably 20 years, mm-hmm. unfortunately for me. I had, you know, quite a detrimental effects on my body. I also go and teach sex ed in the system and try to teach fertility awareness and how important mm-hmm. that is in menstruation. I think that Dr. Geraldine Pryor says it well, and I have met Dr. Yeah. Pryor. She's quite fabulous. She says
I've read a lot of her writings.
Yeah, she's a really lovely woman. She says it's healthy to have a good bleed and that an amazingly, our periods are an amazingly intricate and carefully crafted cycle that is a vital sign of our health. Mm-hmm. And another quote was, to wantonly disrupt this is a horrifying thought. And I think that so many of us don't want to confront our bodily functions. We're too busy, et cetera. There's a lot of mess. Some of the men, our lovers in our lives that are men, are disgusted by it, et cetera. And there's a lot of that going on. But I think it's so important what you're doing, Jane, around rites of passage and educating society that we can make this message a more empowering one. And I think that in your book, you have a really powerful chapter called Period Power and How to Get More of It. And
absolutely.
So and before we close for the break, which is, you know, just if you can do this in 2 or 3 minutes, speak about this period power and how to get more of it as sort of our closing of this important message.
Sure. Wow, that's a big topic for a couple of minutes.
Sorry, love, we've only got an hour.
Yeah, sure.
I know it sucks.
As women, we are rhythmic beings. We are cyclic and circular in our timing, and to be able to, and it really takes experiencing it and having that awareness and even just having a curiosity, even if at the beginning you think, well, I don't know whether I like this or not, but just going, okay, I'm going to accept this and look at it. And there is this amazing capacity and experience that Alexandra, my co-author, and I have spoken with so many women about, and so many women have come to this experience, that by doing that, you're actually entering into a whole other experience of your being that you can't touch if you don't do it. It's a bit like, you know, if I was to describe to you what, you know, smelling a rose is, but you'd never smelt one or never smelt a flower. I could just keep describing it all day, but it really wouldn't give you the depth of experience of a really strong, fragrant bloom.
Right.
And it's
a nice
similar
analogy.
To really enter into the menstrual experience.
Right. Beautiful. I think you did that incredibly well.
I wasn't watching the clock there.
No, that's great. So we're going to take a break, and this is the time in the show where we have to let you know that you're listening to Juice Box on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, BC, Canada. Yes, and we have a lovely caller from our guest from Australia, Jane Bennett, co-author of The Pill. Are you sure it's right for you? In the second half of the show, we're going to be talking a lot about some of the ways that we can combine methods to prevent contraception for those of us who may be on the pill, want to get off of it, and what are our options. We're going to talk a little bit about that. We're going to talk about fertility awareness method. It's a very complex topic. We're going to try to cover that quickly. And then we're going to be talking about where they do this. Jane and Alexandra do this great switch in the book about connecting to your body and your feedback loop and your inner psychic and all of this really interesting concepts and this deer exercise I find very fascinating. So mm-hmm. we're talking about that and just some natural health methods for problem periods, for problem skin, for endometriosis, if we have time for that. But I would love it if we could spend a good chunk of the half hour talking about how your period is connected to your relationship and men and PMS mm-hmm. and the rhythm of sexuality and how the pill has made men lazy lovers. That's what I want to talk about. So we're hoping you'll stay tuned in and stay with us for the second half. Jane, thank you, and we'll just be taking a quick break. Sure. We welcome your calls during this time. Call in at 604-822-2487. That is 604-UBC-CITR, and I'm sure Jane will be pleased to answer your questions. You are listening to Juicebox, and we'll be right back.
Parade, and you are listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, BC, Canada.
Where's that? Juice Box is a sexuality education show geared to adult audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Okay, and we're back.
And I will, note to self, I will not play live concert things ever again. But that was supposed to be Chaka Khan, I'm Every Woman. It just didn't quite sound as good in concert as it does usually on video. So sorry about that, everybody. Anyway, if you're joining us now, you're on Juicebox Radio, and we've got a very special guest calling all the way around from halfway around the world, from Australia. And we've got Ms. Jane Bennett on, and we are talking about the pill and her wonderful book. So before we went on a break, we were touching base in regards to the menstrual cycle and just embracing it a little bit more. And Julia was mentioning in terms of the fact that I was making faces, and I just want to mention that because I know as a kid, Julia, do you remember reading that book, Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, which
yes.
was one of Judy Blume's books.
And did you read that, Jane?
I did, yes. Okay.
Across the world, we've read this book.
I was wondering about that. But I remember I was so excited to get it, and I couldn't wait. And then I got it, and by the age of 10, I'd asked my doctor for a hysterectomy so I would never have to go through that pain ever again.
Mm. So,
wow.
So I just thought it was interesting. But I too was put on for just menstrual irregularity when I was quite young.
Yeah, me too. Just like I hadn't even been a regular cycle for 2 years, so I didn't even have a regular cycle.
Which is very normal.
And it's just
early on.
Yes, it is, absolutely. Okay, so let's switch gears a little bit here mm-hmm. and just talk about some of the other options that are out there, because these contraceptive methods that we've been talking about that are hormonal, which is like the NuvaRing, which is a ring in your vagina. There's the patch. There's a depot shot. These are all basically hormones in different ways of putting them into your body. The other methods, there's barrier methods like, you know, the pill, or sorry, barrier methods such as the condom, diaphragm, the IUD is not a barrier, but it's an intrauterine device. It's and sometimes they do have hormones, so make sure if you're going to get an IUD that you check that you're not getting the one with the hormone.
Because diaphragm.
You know, diaphragms, thank you, and I think I mentioned. Anyway, there's spermicides and fertility awareness methods. So if you do the combo of these things, and you talk about it in your pill, or in your book, sorry. Did I mention we haven't been on the air for 5 weeks and I'm very rusty? So you talk about this in your book, and of course any clinic will give you all kinds of information enough to spin your head with the different methods that you can use. You talk about having combination methods in your book, which I think is a really a good idea, because we don't need to protect ourselves from getting pregnant for the entire time of our cycle. There's only like certain windows that we need to watch out for. So I think that this complex process of doing multiple methods, using things like spermicide and condoms at certain times of the month, charting with fertility awareness. Fertility awareness is a very complex area, so I'm going to let Jane speak about that, because you give workshops on it, so it's really...
Yes, absolutely. Well, I would like to say first up that actually it's not that complex.
Okay. I'm glad you think so.
If you're well taught, it becomes so obvious and intuitive, but it does require a process of just knowing. Usually what it involves is taking your temperature for a period of several months, checking cervical mucus at the mouth of the vagina so you don't have to be going up toward the cervix, are the two main methods there. And to write down every day the readings of those two things, and with really good guidance, learning exactly when you're ovulating and what the signs are as you lead up to ovulation. After a number of months, it becomes really obvious, and then it's very simple. So it's actually quite a these days it's a very precise process. Sometimes women and sometimes doctors get confused when they think about natural methods. They're thinking about the rhythm method, which I don't know actually anywhere that's used on its own anymore, because it's only based on calculation based on previous menstrual cycles, and we all know that our cycle can get thrown out.
Yes,
out of
exactly.
whack by being busy, by flying, by ill health, that sort of thing.
Diet.
So
too much exercise.
The fertility awareness methods can be incredibly precise and effective. Just going back to your question about about these about combining methods. The way that we like to teach about contraception is particularly for women. Men, if a man is healthy and fertile, he could be fertile right through his life from puberty. Whereas women aren't fertile all the time. They're not fertile all the time during their cycle. In fact, it's only at the most, and this is with safety margins, we would allow about a week. But the actual time that the egg is viable is only 12 to 24 hours. So most of the time we're not fertile.
That's right.
And women are fertile for up to 40 years of their life. So what I like to say is it's actually really worthwhile learning for ourselves about how to use different methods, because we're going to have, during those 40 years, there'll be different stages of our life. There might be obviously a time early on when we may not need contraception at all. There might be a time where we're sort of having just periodic involvement with a partner. And then there might be a time where we're really settled and having a very regular sex life. And then we might be trying to conceive. We might be between children. There's all sorts of different times and different needs. So it's really worth our while learning for ourselves how to use different methods really well. And I like to, if we consider that we can break up various methods of contraception into fertility-friendly methods and fertility-unfriendly methods, and you can bet that if a method is unfriendly to your fertility, it's not going to be friendly to your health, because our health and our fertility aren't two separate things. They're totally interpenetrate, if you can use that term. So the fertility friendly methods are those that are the true contraception, that are just keeping a viable egg and a viable sperm, or a bunch of sperm really we need to conceive, apart. And of course barrier methods do that, in a very obvious way. And fertility awareness methods do too, in that we're keeping the healthy viable egg apart from sperm at very specific times of the month. And for women, there's several ways of looking at the effectiveness of contraception. There's so much research around and so much statistics, and sometimes we really lose track of where these originally came from. And there's several things to consider when we're looking at what contraception to use. And of course, if anyone needing contraception is very interested in effectiveness, but we need to dig a little bit more deeply to understand what these mean. And one of the things we forget when we're looking at effectiveness is the longevity of a method, whether a woman is going to use that method, for a long time during her fertile life, whether it's something she can really continue to use effectively. Interestingly, I know in Australia, with the implanon, or the implants that release hormones in the arm, and they can be used for several years, or they're meant to be used for several years.
One in three women have them
taken out in under 12 months because they can't bear the side effects. And it's similar for the hormone-releasing IUDs as well. So it's not going, even though they might be effective methods relatively, it's not going to be effective for very long, because you're not able to continue to use a method. So in order for a method to really work for you, you need it to be something that you can continue to use. Or, as we often promote, it's great to have the understanding of a number of different methods so you can choose what's right for you at different times. And really, at the almost the default method, I would say, is fertility awareness, because then you know, okay, well, I'm not fertile now. I don't need to use anything. Unless, of course, you're not in a steady relationship and you may have STDs or sexually transmitted diseases may be a concern, at which time you, of course, would be needing to use condoms, which is used properly. Condoms can be a very effective method of contraception as well.
They can, but a lot of guys just, and I'm making a generalization here, don't always like to use them. And I know a lot of people that we do talk to, because I do write a lot about relationships and things like that. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times you meet somebody, boy meets girl. You fall in love
or get together, have established a relationship of some kind, start talking about birth control. And a lot of times guys really like to encourage girls to go on the pill because a lot of times they don't want to have a barrier in between. They want to be able to ejaculate inside. And so with that, with the different methods in terms of charting, what are the things would you recommend, ways that we can educate our men so then that way they're not encouraging women automatically to go on the pill because this is what they know?
Well, I have found, and especially in the kind of relationship you just described, that when men are aware of the problems associated with the pill, that what is really happening for their wife or girlfriend. And the thing is, even if she's not experiencing really obvious problems with it, it is affecting every woman that is using these chemicals because at the very least, which is a big thing, her nutritional uptake is disturbed, so that there are many nutrients that she's not getting enough of, and there are a few others that will increase, so that the balance of nutrients changes significantly. And this then leads to, even if she starts from a very healthy place when she starts taking the pill, over a number of years, this can lead to health problems that she may never realize are connected with taking the pill. So I find to answer your question simply, a lot of guys, once they realise the problems, they don't, they love their partner, so they don't want her to be taking those kind of chemicals. As far as using, certainly to use condoms all the time, a lot of people men and women, but maybe particularly guys, would have an objection to that. And this is where, with fertility awareness, it may only be, for a small window of time every month that it's an issue. And then, of course, the couple has a choice. Okay, now I know I'm going to be fertile for, as I said, including generous safety margin, say, for the next week. So that couple can then choose, okay, are we going to use a barrier method? And they might sort of alternate between a condom and a diaphragm,
so that
they don't get fed up with that. Or they might like to abstain and to give their relationship a charge when they're able to get back together after this time. Or they might use other sexual practices that aren't going to lead to that sperm getting anywhere near a viable egg. So they've got a lot of choices, and they might choose different things at different times depending on their needs.
So it comes right back down to communication again, doesn't it?
Oh, totally.
So how would you suggest talking to a partner? What are maybe like the top three things that you should bring up maybe the first time birth control comes up and you think this is going to be somebody that you'd like to have in your life for a long term? Besides the general things like getting tested for sexually transmitted infections right off the bat. And obviously if the woman hasn't been charting, say hypothetically.
Well, if she hasn't been charting yet, it really depends. I mean, for a lot of women that I speak to, there may have been many years when they were sort of struggling with contraception that they had never heard of fertility awareness. So it's sort of, hearing about it is sort of certainly part of the journey. But I think it's a very important conversation, and I think sometimes I speak to women who have felt that for some reason the contraception has been really been left in their court, something to that they have to manage, whereas in a loving relationship, it really is something that both parties need to address and really address together. For the health of that relationship, not just the woman's sort of physical health as well, because a lot of women will find if they're taking the pill over a number of years, they can really start to get quite resentful that they're doing this to their body, that they're the one taking the drugs, and that there's an expectation that for the convenience of the partner and for the relationship that they do that. It's not a shared thing. The other thing I find I talk to a lot of women, a lot of couples about, is how it can really help them be feel close and intimate and trusting and sharing, for them to be aware of her fertile times and her cycle, so that she does have a natural cycle, that she'll have natural rhythms to her sexuality during that cycle. And, of course, all women can be very...
What do you mean by that?
...when they feel most interested sexually. But a lot of women might feel more interested around ovulation, and there's research to support that. For some women, it's around menstruation, and for some women, it's the opposite.
Okay, so are you able to hear us when we're speaking to you when you're speaking at all? Because I think that you can't.
Oh, sorry. No, not really.
Okay, great.
I'm having to strain a little bit to hear you.
Okay. So I guess, interesting, you talked about rhythm of sexuality, so a woman's natural rhythm of sexuality. I want to know if what you've been speaking about is what you mean when you say the pill has made men lazy lovers. Is that they're relying on, or they've really been gotten used to just women taking care of the contraception and not having to think about things or communicate about it with them? And is that what you mean by they've become lazy lovers?
Yeah, okay. That is what we mean. It means they don't have to be considerate about their fertility and have that communication. And sometimes what happens with that too is if a woman does fall pregnant, even if she's been using contraception, often she will feel blamed, even though she was, doing her best. And of course, there's no method of contraception that's 100%, and they do fail a lot more often than we often hear about.
Yes, I agree. They have failed me quite a bit in my life. So the rhythm of sexuality, I just want to speak a little bit about that for a few minutes. In a natural cycle, meaning you're not hormonally altered, what are some of the rhythms that you're speaking about?
Well, I can try to speak generally, but also it's important for your listeners to know that for each woman, she needs to kind of explore what it is for her, because it will vary for all of us. But, as an example, it might be that quite naturally we're more sexually charged around ovulation. And there was some fascinating research done by a guy from the United States on primates. And with the chimpanzees, he tested them, because normally the male chimpanzee is the aggressor.
Right.
And so we'll initiate sexual contact. So what he did is put the male and female pairs in separate cages with a doorway, but the female was the only one that could press the lever and to open the door between them. And what he found is that their sexual contact dropped a lot, and the only time at which it was the same as it had been before was around ovulation. So the female chimpanzees were very happy to admire their partner through the glass or Perspex or whatever it was, but actually were more really interested sexually at ovulation. And we know with human beings that women, there's been quite a lot of different bodies of research, but women will be attracted to different kinds of men at ovulation than at other times in their cycle. They smell different, their sense of smell is different at that time, their skin is different, many qualities are different at ovulation. Mm-hmm. Another time that's interesting in a usually noticed by women in steady relationships is in the pre-menstruum and particularly during menstruation. They may not be as some women are, but a lot of women aren't as sort of really assertively feeling sexual, but their capacity for deep intimacy is very high at that time. So if they're in a relationship and able to really spend time with their partner when they're not sort of all racing around and busy and feeling crazy in a busy modern life, then it can be a very deep, connected intimacy that they experience at that time. So they're kind of some general examples of how that can be.
Fabulous. I love it. Sounds really good.
It does. I have a question for you. We had a tantric teacher on our show before who had mentioned that when women are on the pill, that they find that people smell different. Is that true?
Yes. Absolutely. There's been some great research that's come out of Europe and England. It's been repeated recently in England around smell. And the way that it works is that when we're attracted to a partner, we are generally attracted to someone who has a different sense of smell and smells different to us. And this is sort of quite complex because, it's often below the level of our awareness. And our sense of smell and what we smell is connected to our immune systems. And they find that if we're attracted to people who smell different and we get together and then later on have children, our children have a wider ranging immune system. So that it's actually a really healthy thing that that we're naturally attracted to someone with a different sense of smell and who smells different. Whereas when women are on the pill, it changes their sense of smell significantly, and it's similar to the sense of smell that a pregnant woman will have, which is not surprising really, because these levels of hormones that we have in our bodies when we're taking the pill is most similar. Well, it's not the same as being pregnant, of course, but hormonally it's most similar to that state. So there's a lot of the side effects that women experience on the pill are actually very similar to the usually temporary side effects of being pregnant. So one of the things that happens when you're pregnant is you're more sensitive to the smell of food than the smell of what they call the social smell, but which is basically the smell of white male sweat.
Pheromones.
This is what happens for women on the pill, is that their smell sensitivity changes, and they're more likely to be attracted to a man who smells the same as them. If they then form a partnership and later on try to have children, because their sense of smell is the same, they're less fertile together. So this can be part of the problem of fertility after being on the pill. And the children will have narrower immunity.
Oh.
So they will have more problems.
Not a good match.
With allergies and all sorts of things.
That's not a good match then. Yeah, that's interesting because I do hear a lot about the endocrine system and the smell sense and how, you know, a lot of times how we smell and what we gauge as our potential lover's smell has so much to do with whether or not we'd actually mate well with them and make good offspring with them. So it's really, you know, one of the things I do love about Australia, and as we wrap the show up, I want to acknowledge Australian research for being so advanced in the realm of sexuality. I know that the male birth control pill is coming out. The studies that are being, first human studies, are they not coming out of Australia on the male pill?
Well, you know, it's really hard to get information about it. I have heard some information about some people using a male hormonal injection recently, and certainly there has been work on a male pill.
I've been hearing
about this for years, so
okay.
I'm a bit wait and see.
right. Well, I just know that I've seen a lot of the research I've looked at over the 10 years I've been studying sexuality at University of British Columbia here, has had a lot of really good research out of Australia and New Zealand. So I feel like, I just wanted to say you guys are quite far ahead in a lot of capacities.
Oh, well, it shows you what we're interested in, doesn't it?
Hey, well, you know, why not? It's a healthy...
Absolutely.
So, you know, it's been a really informative show. I'm sad that we didn't really get to talk about everything. It would be wonderful if Alexandra and yourself would come on again and speak more about some of the, you know, the aspects of males and men and PMS and just how our periods are connected to a relationship, a little bit more about that. I think it's really interesting. And you know, for anyone interested in finding out more about what Jane Bennett has been talking about tonight, you can find their book, I guess. How do we find your book?
Several places. It is an Allen and Unwin book, so they could go. They can order it from the Allen and Unwin website. Certainly, the Com.au, which is their Australian website. Amazon, of course, have it. But beyond that, I'm not sure where it would be available in bookstores in Canada.
I don't think it is. I don't think it's available here in Canada yet. The publisher sent me one and said that it was by order in Canada. So, hopefully some of the more advanced bookstores will pick it up. But Habit, is that something online that's easy to find?
Habit.
Yeah, you said something about how we could order it on Habit.
Oh, sorry. I meant the Allen and Unwin website would probably be the best of all.
Okay.
They have it.
Oh, they have it. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, and then, Jane, are you interested in giving out your email address at all or somewhere
Certainly.
That people
I'll
could reach you?
I'll give you my email address, and I'm very happy to hear from anyone who has questions or thoughts. It's Hi Jane. HIJANE at vicvic.chariot, chariot.net.au.
Okay, great.
And
fabulous.
I can send them more information about the book and so on, too.
Well, that would be
and the natural fertility management methods of contraception as well.
Yes, and there's some really great books. And one of the things I do love about your book, The Pill, Are You Sure It's Right for You, is that you have such a great collection of resources at the back. And I looked through it, of course, and found many books and articles and videos that I've looked at over the years, and think it's a great collection of resources, which is, you know, three quarters of the battle when you're writing a book. So I think it was really a fabulous job there and a very valuable resource for so many sex educators and interested parents and people mm-hmm. that are interested in their own health and using natural methods for things like the endometriosis or, you know, fibroids or just, you know, all of that stuff. It's all in there and the social construction of sexuality and menstruation and all of that. So I really appreciate your hard work and Alexandra as well. And thanks so much for being on the show.
Oh, thank you. It's been great to speak with you.
Okay, take care.
Okay,
thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And I have one more thing I need to add, because at the end of the break, I forgot to mention a juice berry that's very important for this week coming up, and we would have been mentioning it for the last few weeks previous if we've been on the air, and that's the upcoming Alternate Education Conference in Vancouver here. People are flying in from all over to as they hold their annual Challenge and Change Conference, and it provides really excellent workshops by very highly regarded and informed presenters on a variety of topics dealing with at-risk youth in our communities and in our schools. So the Alternate Ed Conference is happening. You can check out information on that by going to BCTF, that's the BC Teachers Federation.ca, BCTF.ca/BCAEA, and that's the BC Alternate Ed Association. So I'll be there this coming week, Thursday and Friday. And for previous guests that we've had on the show, David Hatfield will also be doing one of the workshops at this conference. I think it'll be a very valuable use of your time, whether you're anyone working with this youth, or a teacher, or a parent, counselors, probation officers, administrators, youth workers, etc. Do come and find out ways to meet the challenges of students with behavioral difficulties and social dysfunctions. So that's the Alternate Ed Conference in Vancouver. It starts Wednesday night. You can sign in, and then it's mostly Thursday and Friday.
It sounds like it's going to be really good.
Yeah, I'm quite excited about it. Lots of networking to be done there for me with my big pile of cards that I have to give out. I have two websites now, so I can choose who I want to advertise myself to, whether it's my new website, which is on sexloveintelligenceeducation.com, and it's a brand new website. It's still kind of a little bit rough, but it looks pretty good.
It looks great, Jules.
Thanks. And then, of course, our Juicebox Radio, which has been moved hosts, and we are going to be upgrading and changing things as we go, but there are a few new pictures up on Juicebox Radio if you're interested in seeing the updated version. So we'll be working on that. Caroline and I have some fresh ideas coming up for the next year. Things are going to be a changing around here a little bit.
And it's exciting.
Yes.
We might have an additional host.
Change is always exciting.
You'll have to wait and see.
We do appreciate you tuning in last year, 2008, right?
Yeah.
And then this year, 2009, we're in our sixth year here. And I'm so excited and so grateful to have you as my partner. You've been insurmountable aid and help and such a fresh and wonderful addition to the show. So bless you, Caroline.
Well, bless you too, my darling.
And here we are, Hans Claus, of course, we've gone over as we did the last time we ended the year last year. We hope you enjoyed tonight's show. If you have any recommendations for a show topic, please be in touch with Julia or Caroline at juiceboxradio.com. And meanwhile, Marion is in the house. He's a very sexy man to be miserable with, I must say.
He's so hot.
As he hosts his Hans von Claus Misery Hour.
And his leather gloves on with those fingers.
His fingers cut out. Very hot.
It's very hot.
Maybe one day we could make them wet, not from the snow. Anyway, all right. So listen to Juicebox Radio every Wednesday night at 10 o'clock.
And what a cock.
You just experienced Juicebox Radio, a show dedicated to developing your relational and individual sexual health, expressing diversity, celebrating queerness, and encouraging pleasure at all stages. Be sure to tune into Juicebox every Wednesday night at 10. In the meantime,